Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. Welcome to the Silence the Mind Cluck podcast. I'm Maria T. Finch. I'm your host, and I'm an intuitive strategy guide. I am thrilled today to have Shruti with me. Shruti, welcome.
Thank you, Maria. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so nice to have you. So to start out with, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I am Shruti Rustagi. I'm originally from India. Currently, I'm based in Seattle. I have about 17 years of professional work experience across consulting, mergers and acquisitions, and currently I'm the CFO of a $4 billion business unit within Amazon. Outside of my work, I'm also a leadership coach and executive coach, and I have worked with over hundreds of executives and actors in almost 800 hours of coaching. Helping them compound their effectiveness and growth through mindset shifts.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. Okay, we've got a lot to talk about. So to start out with, tell us about a time in your life when you were setting out to accomplish something bigger and your mind cluck was really loud.
Yeah. So I can think of one thing, Maria. This was almost 6 years ago, 5 years ago, in fact. So this was a time when I had moved from India to Dubai. And back in India, I was at a fairly senior position with almost 11 years of experience and managing and being partner to some of the big businesses within India, almost billions of dollars. Wow. And when I came to Dubai, I took a break for a year. And then I got this opportunity with Amazon. And I joined Amazon because I was like, it's fine. It's a little lower than the level I would have wanted, but that's okay. I can make it work. And I was super enthusiastic when I joined. But the moment I joined, I realized that the people and the peer group I was working with were much younger than me. It was a younger company. Yeah. It was a new geography. It was a new industry.
Wow.
And the, as you call it, the mind clock started, you know, kicking in. What am I doing? I'm not good enough. Am I a complete failure? Like, It was coming to a point that I would just be mad at any mistake I did. I would be nasty to myself. I would just be like, can't you even get one thing right?
Oh, yeah.
It was, there was a point, it was so horrible. Almost a month and a half into it, I called up my husband and I cried on phone.
Yeah.
I was like, am I that dumb? Am I such a failure? And yeah. So that point, and then I figured this is it. I cannot do this. I cannot do this to my family. I cannot do this to myself. I did something. I did what I teach now. I did a bunch of mind shifting things. And 4.5 years from that point, I am, as I just mentioned in my intro, I'm CFO of a $4 billion business within Amazon today.
Yeah.
Moved countries and did turn it all around.
Wow. That's incredible. That's really incredible. So going back to that point in your life, so you're on the phone with your husband, you're crying, and are you thinking, okay, something has to shift? I need to quit this job, or I've got to change how I think about it, or what was going through your mind at that point?
So at that very point, it was, I need to quit. Even if I quit, who's going to take me? I am such a failure. What will I say? What did I do wrong at Amazon? So that phone call was just a continuation of everything that was going on in my mind. Anytime somebody said something to me, I would be like, why are they so rude? And all of that.
Oh, yeah.
I think the pivoting point for me was a morning when it was a weekend. I was still working because I was still catching up the learning curve with Steve and everything. Mm-hmm. And my daughter woke up and she hadn't done one of the homeworks she was supposed to have done by then. This is, she was just in grade 3. So you can imagine how young she was.
Yeah, yeah.
And she comes to me and she's like, Mom, I need to finish this, but can I just do it tomorrow? And I snapped at her saying, if you don't do your work, if you're not serious, you will amount to nothing in life.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And Maria, I can't tell you, you can make it out from my voice even now.
Yeah. Oh, I understand.
To that moment of being a mom, I was like, what have I done?
Yeah.
What did I just do? And why?
Mm-hmm.
That was the moment for me when I was like, okay, enough. Shut down your laptop. And so we used to live very close to the Dubai Marina at that point. I shut down my laptop and I just go out for a walk. And I'm like, what's going on? And that was the point when I decided, no, one, I'm not that bad of a mom.
Yeah.
And I'm not such a failure. Stop it. So, you know, that was the point when it just hit me. Something's not right.
Well, and you know, I think so many people can relate to hitting a point like that in their life, whether it's with a child or a spouse or whatever loved one or even on their own. I mean, I think probably everyone has experienced something like that at some point in their life. So what steps did you do initially to try and, so you gain this awareness of like, okay, I don't want to be where I am right now. What were your first steps to try and get yourself out of feeling like you're a failure when clearly you weren't?
So I think I went back. The very first thing which I did was to start getting everything I had in my head out. And I did that through a technique which is called morning pages. But basically, I would say this is essentially journaling. So what I did, so that day when I came back, I just wrote in my own journal everything that I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on with my day. And then the next day onwards, I started the moment I woke up, I would write everything down that was going through my mind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if the thought was, I don't know what to write, I would just write.
Yeah, that's such a good idea.
So the way morning pages works is like two kind of ways. What I did was I restricted myself to 10 minutes at the least when I would keep pouring whatever it was, either through writing or by talking out to myself or anything. So that is what I did. The other thing that some people do is they would restrict the number of pages. So they would say, till I fill up a page, I would keep writing.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So, and you can, and, you know, for our listeners, you could pick whatever amount of time. So maybe it's 10 minutes, maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's 3 minutes, you know, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. For me, 10 minutes was like, I want to just think through, gather my thoughts, and then keep writing. So it's totally up to how you feel. But the idea behind this technique is you get a brain dump and an emotion dump.
Mm-hmm.
Get everything out of your system. The benefit is when you start looking through what you've written, you realize how ridiculous is this? You know? And that is the beauty of journaling and these morning pages, that you basically start realizing and you start accepting the true situation. So the truth in my situation, for instance, was everything was new. I was learning to cope up at so many different levels.
Right.
I had to give myself the space to learn. I had to give myself the space to grow, to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's what started coming out, you know, through writing.
Yeah, and it's so valuable. And I love what you said about if you didn't know what to write, you wrote, I don't know what to write, because I think so much of writing is getting yourself into stream of conscious. And so it's literally just writing whatever comes into your mind, because your mind will take you where you need to go. I really believe that. Yeah.
Very beautifully put, Maria. Yes, your mind will take you where you need to go. And often that's when the subconscious thoughts, the thoughts which are really, you know, tucking you in, start coming out on paper. And one thing I would definitely like to say, please don't give up after 2 to 3 days of writing. You know, first few days, you may not have much to write, especially if you've never done journaling or writing before, even writing a diary. If you've not been into that, first few days, you'll find it difficult. Keep at it. And then you will start seeing the benefits.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, like you also mentioned, if you're somebody who's more comfortable talking, then you talk it out and you can have the same effect. The advantage of writing is that you can go back to it. And so, I mean, another option is now, there's all kinds of apps. You can literally just record yourself talking and then go back and listen to it. That's another approach to this, you know, just getting it all out of your mind. Yeah. And so then where did that lead for you? So you start to see what your mind is doing. And then what was next for you? What were some other things that you did to ease yourself into the situation you were in and to be gentler and kinder with yourself?
So once I started accepting what was going on, I figured what I needed in that space. So I realized that I needed two things. One, a lot more empathy for myself. So in terms of actions or in terms of a technique, because I strongly believe that you set up mechanisms, you set up processes that then work for you, even in personal life, right? So I set up this thing called three mistakes, and it's a technique now I have shared with so many of my clients, and it's worked with each one of them literally every time.
Oh, that's great.
The technique goes as follows. I would tell myself, okay, I'm giving myself the gift of three mistakes every single day.
Okay.
If I make three mistakes, I'm fine. I'm human. If I make four, I will see how can I course correct.
Okay.
But I'm not being nasty to myself. Every time I make a 0.00 kind of a decimal error instead of writing 0.05,
right,
I'm
right.
killing myself over it. And that really reframed it for me, because it was like, okay, I have given my mind the latitude to grow.
Yeah.
And so that was the thing I put in place on my everyday working. The second thing which I did was, and this is another place where my morning pages actually helped me reframe it. I reframed my role in my company. So first I put it down on paper. What do I think it is? Then I started talking about it like the way I thought about it. And then in my meetings, I started being that person.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant. I really like that. Yeah.
So, and I can elaborate a little bit more on this, how, you know, the way I basically went about. So in terms of the designation, I was a senior finance analyst.
Okay.
Okay. But when I reflected back, my role was actually managing the finance and taking the decisions and approving investments for 3 countries within Amazon.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
For a particular business, which is actually 50% of the entire Amazon's business in those 3 countries and most of the profit.
Wow.
So I was like, this is big. Just because my designation isn't doesn't mean the role is small. And yeah,
I was going to say, did you give yourself, at least in your mind, a different title?
I did.
Yeah. What did you call yourself?
At that point, I just call myself the finance head for this business for the entire MENA region, which is Middle East, North Africa at that time. And I was like, that's who I am.
Yeah.
And at that point, Maria, I did not have anybody reporting into me, but I still call myself a finance head because in my head, that was an important role. And I wanted to look at it like that. And eventually, a year and a half down the line, I was able to build up a team because I was able to push through that this is the right way to look at this business.
Right, right. That makes so much sense. Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing. And that was the power of reframing it in my mind and then in my communication. Mm-hmm. I started talking about it as such. Mm-hmm. I stopped introducing myself as I'm a senior finance analyst.
No, yeah.
That's no longer who I am.
Right, right. Wow, that is so amazing because I can think of back in my earlier days when I had a traditional job and worked for other people, so many times my title didn't begin to reflect what I brought to the table. And I think there are many people who are in that position, especially women.
Especially women, yes. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally. And we need to own all the value that we bring to the table.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Okay. Well, I love that. So what else I'm so curious to hear what else.
And then the last part of this, which is what I was saying, I started being that person was, and this I will say will sound very tactical, but I highly, highly recommend that you think about where you can do something like this in your own spaces. Mm. So what I started doing was I started working with more senior leaders in the entire organization. Uh-huh. I started doing smaller projects, you know, one-off analyses they wanted to do. I will raise my hand for it. Uh-huh. I wanted to work more and more, get to know more and more because I knew I had a ton to offer. Mm-hmm. And so there came a point when for my business, you know, and some of the associated areas, nobody even went to my manager. It was always me who was the key point of contact. That helped me, you know, think and get to know about more roles across the wider Amazon. And then I moved from Dubai to Seattle on a worldwide role. So... Mm-hmm. Wow. That helped me make the switch. So never, ever, I would say, you know, once you start believing that's the value you're bringing, start reflecting it in how you speak with people and how you work with them.
Uh-huh.
Share the ideas. You have got so much power. I think it's what we need to do a lot more of.
I think that's so smart. So one thing that came to mind as you were talking about that, How did you handle your relationship with your manager? Because if somebody more senior is coming to you instead of them, was there any kind of, you know, turf wars, any kind of issues with that? Or how did you navigate that?
Very, very good question, Maria, because this is definitely something I think people experience. Sometimes it's also just the... you know, people have that concern, like you said, the turf war. So the way I did it was that I communicated with him on two levels. One, what was my aspiration for this role?
Okay.
He's the one who had hired me, so he knew I did come with a lot of experience.
Yeah.
And I made it clear, you know, after I got into my sensibilities, I had a discussion with him, and every month I would sit with him and actually tell him what are my plans for myself, how I want to grow, and how some of this is going to be part of the growth that I look for myself. So I would want to own pieces independently, and I would want him to support me. The moment you you ask somebody for support and guidance, they are automatically invested in your growth.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's true as long as you're asking the right person.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I have been in a situation where I know that my abilities intimidated my boss. And so my boss wasn't willing for me to make the kind of connections you're talking about. So I'm gathering that this boss was supportive of you really, you know, growing into your own self.
Yeah, I would definitely hand it over to him. He was a supportive manager for sure. And also because you also have to sometimes think of it this way. Are you making it easier on their lives? Yeah. He had a few other things to take care of as well. Mm-hmm. I was freeing up his bandwidth completely on this side of the business. And I would say, yes, I have been definitely fortunate in having such a supportive boss, mm-hmm. as well as it's also to do with how do you structure and position it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Wow. So tell us, so I know that you have now, you know, you now advise people on all of these things, and I think you have some interesting examples from your clients. So let's hear about that.
Definitely. So I can share the one, and this is pretty recent, almost like 5 months ago, I guess now. Mm-hmm. So this is somebody who was a business head for India, for all of India, okay. of a worldwide business. And I won't, it's for confidentiality purposes, I will name the company.
That's okay. Yeah.
All of that.
Of course.
And the part that they had in India was very small, you know, as compared to the entire global business that they did. And it was not also profit generating. Mm-hmm. I started working with her and we started identifying how was she feeling in that place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, her initial thoughts that she started out with when we started working together was that I'm such a small part of the business. Nobody cares about me. I can't mm-hmm. get any resources. Have I really done the right move? Because she had moved from being the head of, you know, a lot of things. People knew her to mm-hmm. something where the worldwide did not know her at all.
Okay.
And she had these feelings of, did I make such a wrong decision? I feel like a failure because it's a loss-making business. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to do anything with it. And, you know, those were the thoughts that she started out with. And then every time there was a bad review, she would be like, I just feel so blotched and what can I do about this? And the work that I started doing with her was, it was pretty interesting. We actually created a SWOT for her. So SWOT is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Uh-huh. And instead of opportunities, I would almost call it areas for growth. It isn't a weakness. You can always grow it, right? Yeah. So once we listed those down for her, the moment she saw her strengths bucket, it was a mindset shifting moment for her.
Mm, yeah.
She was like, oh yeah, these are strengths that I have.
Right.
And I haven't been using them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we started repositioning what her role was like. Why was India important to worldwide in that scheme of things? Mm-hmm. It was small. What was the opportunity? Mm-hmm. And that's what we started focusing on. Mm-hmm. So we worked on how she would start communicating to everybody what she was doing and that she was the head for the fastest growing business.
Yeah.
6 to 7, 6 to 7 weeks down the line after we started doing that, mm-hmm. things changed in terms of the way her peers in other geographies started looking at the growth, started looking at her, started doing the one-on-ones, started learning from, so what are the new things you're trying? Uh-huh. You know, these things were great. And then almost like 2 to 3 weeks down the line from then. So when we started almost like 3 months, 3.5 months, She, for the first time in the history of that business, she converted it from red to black. You know, so when we say bottom
line, yeah, red, yeah. No, loss. I know what you mean. Yeah.
And
wow, amazing.
Amazing. You have turned the page. It's amazing. And that success of just that, you know, one quarter's performance was so instrumental. It fueled her. And today, when you get introduced to her, she says, I'm a turnaround leader.
Turnaround
fast-growing businesses.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. So one of the things that comes to mind for anybody listening, if you're in a position where you're feeling frustrated, you feel underutilized, you're not satisfied, starting by actually doing your own SWOT analysis for yourself can just, because like you said, looking at that bucket of strengths, that is so powerful. And I think that especially for women, again, I think it can be so easy to be in a role where you are a powerhouse and they're using just like a teeny little light bulb part of you. And first you've got to recognize like, what is the whole of my powerhouseness?
Exactly. What I told her was, because I love to travel, I had told her, you have to first check the currency in your purse.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's such a good expression. I really like that. I really like that. That is so powerful. So do you have any advice for somebody who's listening to this and thinking like, oh, I'm just stuck. Where do I start?
Yeah, I would say the one advice I would like to give everybody would be know your awesomeness and be it.
Yeah. I think that is such a great statement. That is exactly what everyone needs to do. And I think the whole thing is like the fundamental belief in yourself. Like that's what that really gets to, is having that fundamental belief in yourself, no matter what's going on around you, that you say, you know what? I can do more. I deserve more. I'm worth more. And then lining up whatever help you need to move yourself in that direction. So whether that's a therapist, a coach, a good friend, a mentor, whatever.
Absolutely, Maria. You put it well.
Yeah.
People should start owning their awesomeness and then see where they need help.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This was such a fun conversation. And wow, I'm so impressed with all that you've accomplished. And I can think of so many ways that this is applicable. It doesn't just have to be about work. You can apply this to your personal life too.
Absolutely. And it was such a pleasure chatting with you, Maria. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the pleasure's all mine. All right. To our audience, thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of mind clucking up your days? Book a free strategy session with me at mindcluck.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a fabulous day.